Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Wilbur, welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. This is part two of our two-part series on the strange, beautiful, touching, cinematic, and hoax-ridden story of Clever Hans.
Available on video on demand in December of 2020. Starring Daniel Day-Lewis as older Hans, Finn Wolfhard as younger Hans, Gary Oldman as the professor.
Von Osten.
Yes, Von Osten. Right. Yes, indeed. And who else? Who do we say? Christoph Waltz as his nemesis, Fungst.
Let's get to it.
Of course, there's going to be skeptics saying, come on, guys, it's a horse. There's got to be, where's the gimmick? Where's the twist? We got to find this. Because again, like to your point, Ben, you know, some people like this as kind of like a light bit of entertainment. But if you really get down to the nitty gritty of what this might mean for us as a species, that's when things start to get a little heavy. So there was a commission assembled. The Hans Commission, because psychologists, zoologists, and other experts in different fields that had, something to gain or lose from this being the real deal were assembled. Studies in animal cognition and their, you know, the way they process information were not really a thing. So this was very much looked at as an opportunity to kind of figure out how far this actually went and was it real?
Yeah. And this is where we introduce C. Lloyd Morgan, one of the more skeptical people in the crowd. C. Lloyd Morgan is a British psychologist and is responsible for something known as Morgan's Canon. This is a fundamental sort of precept of psychology, comparative animal psychology. C. Lloyd Morgan says, in no case is an animal activity to be interpreted in terms of higher psychological processes, because he thinks higher mental abilities can only be remotely considered as explanations if faculties that are lower in the scale of evolution and development cannot explain it. So he's saying, like, before you say that this horse can think and can read, you need to prove that the horse is not doing all of the other things that we know a horse can do, like be trained, for example. And that's why the German Board of Education starts, you know, as you said, Noel, the Hans Commission. The Hans Commission is like, I want to see a movie where they're superheroes
totally. Or
doing a heist.
Oh, it's a real rogues gallery, dude. Give it to us.
Yeah, we've got a veterinarian. We got a circus manager, a cavalry officer, a gaggle of school teachers, and the director of the Zoological Gardens, kind of like the boss of the Berlin Zoo.
Exactly. And so they have hearings, right? They hear witnesses, they observe the horse's kind of routines. And in 1904, the conclusion of the Hans Commission says that there were no tricks or secret signals involved in Hans's performance, and that they believed that his abilities, his display of cognition and intelligence of a human level were in fact legit.
Yeah, they doubled that. That's not the answer that most people would expect, right? We would not imagine that all these experts would get together and conclude, yep, nope, horses are basically teenagers without thumbs. That is what a horse is now. There are all kinds of questions we have to answer. Should we still eat them? Is it slavery? If we use a horse on a farm, things like that. And this is where we meet one person who's not happy with the commission. This guy is functioning kind of like a conspiracy theorist in the post-Hans Commission world. He's a psychologist. Noel, I'll probably need your help with this name. I'm going to defer to your German aptitudes here. Oscar Pfungst?
Yeah, Pfungst. Yeah, the P is silent. P-F-U-N-G-S-T. Oscar Pfungst. I did kind of make a P sound there because it's fun. But yeah, he's a psychologist who worked in a lab, one of the labs headed by one of the commission members. So he got wind of this and was like, nah, hooey. This is horse pucky, literally. He decided to get to the bottom of this further because he wasn't having it, which is interesting because you're right, Ben. Like, at this point, the matter is closed. He's basically, you know, boxing windmills, right, at this point. And he looks like a crazy person because they have all these, the brightest, the best and brightest, you know, horse experts in the world have decided that, yeah, that Hans is, in fact, a very clever boy indeed. And also, you got to wonder, too, like, how it came off. It's like, can't we just have nice things, you know, Oscar? Can't you just leave well enough alone? But he couldn't leave well enough alone.
Nay,
indeed. It's great, Ben. He designed some pretty clever experiments himself because he was also a clever boy. And he wanted to make sure that Von Osten wasn't like feeding Hans answers, giving him secret hand signals, which, you know, the commission had already addressed that no hand signals were a part of it, but he wanted to be doubly sure. So he removed Von Osten from the situation and made sure that he wasn't the one asking the questions. So he got that all out of the way. This is when it gets really interesting and really smart. And like, I don't even know how he thought of this or how Von Osten thought of this in the first place. But he decided that maybe it was possible the horse was getting something in line with like nonverbal context clues or like, you know, tone change or body language, posture, even the way, you know, inflection of words. So in order to do that, he made sure that the person asking the question did not know the answer to the question, or at least the way that it was worded, etc. Maybe you could unpack that a little bit better, but I'm sort of not quite seeing how that would help.
Here's what he did. He explains the procedure of the test. We have this as a direct quote from Pfungst. He says, Von Osten would whisper a number in the horse's ear, just like 20, right? And nobody else would have heard that number. Then Pfungst would whisper another number in Hans's ear. And for any cinephiles here, in the film adaptation, I really want us to have Von Osten whispering in like one ear and then Pfungst coming in the other ear.
For the biopic, for the poster?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I want Hans center frame. And then maybe we could do like a Beautiful Mind kind of special effect here. You're welcome, Hollywood.
And what would the movie be called, Clever Hans, or just Go for the Gut Punch with just Hans?
I don't know yet. I think there's like a Beautiful Hoof, a Beautiful Mind kind of ripoff. Maybe it's wait, what do you got? You got one?
No, Casey's got one. Casey made a face.
I really just like Hans and like all like a very seriously considered font and like yes. Like a December opening or something.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like that. Horse sense is an expression that you hear sometimes, but I feel like that takes it in a completely different direction. So
yeah, horse sense is maybe a little more of a fun movie. And I think we're talking about serious cinema here, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Got a Gary Oldman.
As the horse.
Von Osten.
No.
As the horse?
No. Daniel Day-Lewis as the horse.
As the horse.
His greatest performance yet. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
And Gary Oldman as Von Osten, for sure, who would be our boy Pfungst, who's kind of Pfungst. Maybe that would be, who's the guy from Inglourious Basterds? Christoph Waltz would be Pfungst, Gary Oldman as Von Osten, and Daniel Day-Lewis as Hans.
I like it. Let's continue. Now picture those amazing actors in your head when we talk about this test. So since each experimenter only knew the number they were individually saying into Hans's ear, that would mean logically, if Hans could add, he would be the only person who knew the answer, the only horse person who knew the answer. So in 31 tests, when they did that method, and then they checked back, out of those 31 tests, Hans was incorrect most of the time. He was only right 3 times. But when they did another 31 test, where both of the experimenters knew the numbers that they were giving to the horse, he was correct 29 times out of 31. So something's happening. If he's really doing math, it should not matter that the two people suggesting numbers don't know the numbers the other person's suggesting. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but I still don't quite understand how Von Osten pulled it off. That's some pretty genius, you know, subtle kind of trickery there, right? So Funks also found that when a questioner stood farther away than Hans was used to, he had trouble correctly answering the questions as well, which, you know, you could just attribute. He's getting yelled at a lot in his ear holes. I mean, maybe the old boy's like lost a little bit of hearing by this point. Kind of feel bad for Hans at this point, don't you guys? He seems like he's really getting put through the ringer.
You know, more and more I'm thinking maybe a younger actor for the horse, maybe like Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things.
Well, maybe we can have him play young Hans, and then it's as the movie progresses, then Daniel Day-Lewis steps in and plays old Hans. I actually like Finn Wolfhard as a young Daniel Day-Lewis. They have a similar kind of kind of extreme, like, you know, look to them. I don't know.
Yeah. We want the life of the horse entire. Anyway, yeah, you're right, Noel. Funst quickly finds that every test he conducts that has a level of scientific rigor ultimately indicates that Hans is not doing this math on his own. And when they conduct tests that are controlling for possible intervening variables, Hans fails miserably. His memory is found to be average as far as what we know about horses at that time and now. So it seems cognitively impossible that Hans can be as clever as we are being told he is. And what they find, at least what Funst finds in his investigation here, is that Hans seems entirely dependent on external stimuli from whomever is asking the question. So he's maybe not great at doing math, but he's top notch at reading people. Just like a cold read psychic.
Exactly. But I still don't quite understand how you would use external stimuli to like get him to seemingly, you know, independently solve like complex math problems. But I think we've got a little bit more information that might help clear some of that up. So Funks noticed that the questioner's everything from breathing to posture to facial tics and expressions and eyebrow, you know, tension, things like that, they changed each time the hoof was tapped. So the way I'm reading this is that the horse was observing the changes of all of those external stimuli. And when we say external stimuli, we're not talking about somebody feeding him the right answer. We're literally talking about the horse observing the questioner with every clop of the hoof and interpreting when he had reached the correct number of clops.
Right.
And because there's such a buildup, especially like, you know, let's say the answer was like 20 or something. I mean, you could very quickly realize when, you know, and we talked about that tension building earlier, right? Even for an audience that, ooh, is this going to be the one? Is this going to be the one? And then to say, okay, he's there. Then there's a relaxing effect. I don't know exactly what this horse was looking at, but I think I'm reading that correctly. Would you agree, Ben?
Yeah. 19, you see the tension building for the horse, and then you get to 20, and then people probably signal their delight too early. They're like, wow, we got to 20. Wow. You know what I mean? But the horse would have kept doing that to 32 or 43. It's tapping until it sees people happy, basically, is the argument. And so Funst learns to read these body cues the same way that he imagines Hans is. And so Funst puts himself in the horse's position, which is great for the film. And he carries out tests and he says, okay, I'll play the part of the horse. Casey, to your point, he's working on his horse sense, right? The thing that he finds is that he can do these tests too. And he doesn't necessarily have to know math. He just has to kind of tap until he sees people reacting and then boom. And what's the reason this is working so well is because people are unaware that they're expressing these cues. This is a big problem in animal training and cognition experiments even today. Von Osten, I think we've established, he's not some flim-flam guy. he's not a con artist. He probably doesn't know the signals that he's giving Hans.
Can I interject one little bit of Hollywoodization for our movie adaptation here?
Go for it.
I would put forth that Fungst gets so obsessed with this and is starting to go a little mad, he dresses up in a horse costume while doing these tests so he can really put himself in the mindset of clever Hans.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm picturing, you know, like a confrontational in front of the bathroom mirror scene where he's like putting a riding champ in his mouth.
Exactly.
He's got some homemade ears.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. Now, what's fascinating about this, which is pretty cool, as we're building to our epilogue here, is that Fungst successfully proved that Hans was not, in fact, doing math. However, he accidentally proved that Hans was incredibly intelligent in one aspect, in one ability, in one skill set, which was reading people. He was better at reading people than Fungst was, than von Osten was, than most of the Germans in the crowd.
You'd think they would have then immediately recruited him to be in like interrogation rooms, you know, when they're like trying to figure out if like a perp is lying. And they would just consult the horse.
Bring the horse.
Bring in the horse. So essentially, I mean, folks proved what he set out to prove, but he actually found a little bit of magic along the way. That's the thing, guys. This story this story isn't completely devoid of, like, this horse was very special. And to your point, Ben, von Osten probably didn't know that. He really just thought he had a special boy on his hand, a real clever Hans. And then what Fungst determined was, no, he was not intelligent like a human, but sure as hell was more observant than a lot of them, because that's something that I think we could all get better at, is being observant of our surroundings and of like being able to read the room. And Hans was an absolute expert at that.
So this is where I take poetic license. We're going to tell you what actually happens in the real world. And then I'd like, if you guys will indulge me, tell you what I see happening in our film, the December release, Hans. So despite the fact that Fungst pretty much proves what's happening, clever Hans remains a sensation. Von Osten continues touring this amazing horse throughout the country of Germany. He's still pulling crowds, getting butts in seats, etc. What's one thing that I think is very interesting? Von Osten never charges for these exhibitions. He genuinely wants to share the gift of clever Hans with the world. And von Osten does this until he passes away in 1909. And Hans goes through a series of owners. Ultimately, he is drafted by Germany to serve in World War I in 1914, which they did not call World War I at that time.
God, this has taken a harrowing turn. Mm-hmm. So, like, this horse wasn't used to being ridden. He was like a show horse. Like, beyond that, he was like a much guarded, you know, piece, like a national treasure. And now all of a sudden, what do you mean? Like, so they're literally riding him into battle? Like, what are they doing with Hans that he would potentially, as legend would have it, pass away on the field of battle? What were they doing with him?
He could have been a riding horse, maybe not. He was an Arabian stallion, but he could have also been pulling munitions or wagons or food supply trains, things like that. There are several different positions he could have filled as a military horse. But you're right, he is rumored to have been killed in action in 1916. However, he lives on today. He's more famous, if you think about it, than a lot of humans who were alive when he was alive, because Hans is in psychology textbooks today. It's the clever Hans effect, named after this horse. And the idea, the clever Hans effect, describes when an experimenter gets seemingly correct answers from an animal or a human being by giving them unconscious cues. And this creates a very convincing illusion of intelligent thought. We've seen the clever Hans effect in drug-sniffing dogs. You've seen skeptics raise the specter of this effect when they don't believe someone who says, I've taught my primate to speak and understand sign language, to a you know, a certain degree, or like this parrot isn't just repeating what I say. It understands me. Good night. You be good. I love you. That story, that kind of stuff.
I have a good example from when I was a kid. I distinctly remember being way too young to really be able to read properly, but impressing my mom, making her think that I was reading by just reciting one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, and looking at the book as though I were reading the words. But it was just memorization. Totally had her going. She thought I was a genius. She couldn't have been more wrong.
Have you told her?
No, dude. I want her to be proud. I want my mommy to love me, dude. I'm not going to shatter her,
tell her
delusions. Okay. No, it's too late for that. I mean, unless she listens to the podcast, which she does. So, oops. Sorry, Mom.
Your secret is safe with me and hopefully with our fellow ridiculous historians listening along. We teased this earlier, and maybe this is a good way for us to begin wrapping up the story of Hans, because although the horse has passed from this mortal plane, the clever Hans effect remains a hallmark of psychological thought, and we are learning so much more about intelligence. We actually know relatively little about intelligence in the first place. We as a species still don't have a super solid 100% definition of intelligence. And we know that animals that we once thought were just, you know, like, plain Jane, kind of, it's an animal. What are you going to do? They turn out to be incredibly intelligent, just maybe not in the same way as us.
And then, you know, like we mentioned before, like you mentioned, Ben, that clever Hans effect lives on today in psychology. It's something that's even been observed in drug sniffing dogs, where like cues from the handler can be picked up by dogs and resulting in like them signaling that, you know, there's drugs when that's not the case. So the false positives. And here's another thing, too, in terms of research. It turns out that there's some new research that has recently come to light that would suggest that Fungst was right and horses actually can read human expressions. Psychologists studied how 28 different horses reacted to seeing pictures of positive versus negative, like positive, like big old grins and negatives, I'm assuming like frowns, and happy and angry photographs of two unfamiliar male faces. And then they looked at their spontaneous reactions to the photos without any training and found that when horses looked at angry faces, they used more of their left eye, which is associated with perceiving negative stimuli. They also had marked increases in heart rate and also showed more stress-related behaviors. And it was published on the 10th of February, 2015 in Biology Letters.
Yeah. So the story of intelligence in living things continues today. It hasn't really ended. We know that further claims of animal intelligence are much harder to dismiss than those of clever Hans. Like I alluded to the brilliant parrot, Alex, a close associate of the scientist Irene Pepperberg. Alex appeared to understand thousands of words and syntax and grammar, but was capable of doing a lot of things that clever Hans was purported to be capable of doing. But it's difficult to dismiss these cases. Also, I know we're going out. We're at the end of time. Corvids are amazing. Octopuses are so massively intelligent. If they lived for more than 2 years at a stretch, they would be running some stuff. I just recently read, did you know octopuses have been documented building neighborhoods? True story.
It doesn't surprise me. Cephalopods never cease to amaze me.
And so that's where we are. That is the story of clever Hans, the real inspiration, perhaps, for Mr. Ed. That is what actually happens with clever Hans. Here's the way I want the film to end, though. I want the film to end with Hans appearing to go to World War I. So clever Hans gets drafted, but he's too clever and he's actually working for like military intelligence, but he's conflicted about it because he doesn't like playing this role as, you know, one of the bad guys. And so I want clever Hans to like fake his death and then to emigrate to America, where he picks up a job in Hollywood, and the post-credit, like mid-credit stinger, is his first appearance as Mr. Ed. Boom, cut, print. I think it's like we're building an extended Hans universe here.
I love it so much, Ben, and I can't wait. I think this should be part of the extended Ridiculous History universe that includes our reboot of The Craft involving Fudge. And then we've got this Clever Hans biopic starring a powerhouse cast and Daniel Day-Lewis coming back again from retirement to give a powerhouse performance as a horse that can do math. Or can he? You'll have to watch the movie to find out.
Or help us make the movie. We want to hear your suggestions. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. We hope that you enjoyed today's episode. This is my excuse to ask for pictures of your pets, because I love to see them. Let us know if your pet has any idiosyncrasies or hidden cognitive talents. Thanks, as always, to Gabe Lousier, and thanks to you, Casey Pegram. Casey, If you had all the time, wishes are, feels weird to say wishes or horses here, but you guys know what I'm talking about. And Casey, and you as well, Noel, if you could have any pet in the world, what would it be?
Hamster. Already got it. Living the dream.
What'd you say, Casey?
Clever Hans.
Oh, specifically that horse?
Yeah, why not? I mean, he seems cool.
A lot of upkeep, bro. And also, he's dead, so.
Well, we're talking perfect world here, so
okay.
Clever Hans,
I gotcha.
Lives on.
He does. In the hearts and minds of all of us. And that includes even the most dastardly among us, like Jonathan Strickland, the Quizster, Christopher Hasiotis, here in spirit, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, and of course, in your heart, Ben, and your heart, Casey, and mine. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.